I've been battling desktop crashes.
Uh-oh.
Yes, it's been getting me down a bit. So I'm going to rant a little bit and maybe ask for some technical support. So, dear sir, I write to you with reference to the desktop computer that I'm using, which is, it's a NUC. It's an Intel NUC. It's a Skull Canyon NUC. And what keeps happening is the desktop freezes and then GNOME crashes. So everything will freeze up, lock up. And it's not, I haven't been able to attribute it to me doing a particular thing. I can have anything open and then just randomly click on a window and it will just die. And sometimes it doesn't wake up from suspend. There's some just like weirdness about it. And it's been frustrating. It's running 2310 stock GNOME. I say stock GNOME. It's got loads of applications installed on it, but it's Ubuntu 2310. Now it does dual boot. It's got a second disk in it and it dual boots Windows. And when I'm running Windows, no problem. So this is a rather Linux specific issue.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit of a weird beast because it's got this hybrid Intel AMD CPU GPU thing, and I don't think they made many of these, but that's the processor at the middle of it.
Yeah, so I think you introduced this as the Skull Canyon NUC, but I think it's the Hades Canyon that you've got there.
Oh, it's got a big skull on the front of it, so I thought it was a Skull Canyon.
Yeah, that was a thing in their gamer edition things. Yeah, but this is sort of the unholy union of like Pepsi and Coke, because this is an Intel CPU with an AMD GPU on the same SoC.
I had no idea this existed.
Oh, it's hilarious.
Yeah.
Now, interestingly, to make it, well, you can either insert the word better or worse, depending on your point of view. To make it more interesting, shall we say, I have an external GPU. So there is a Razer core attached to a Thunderbolt cable. And in that enclosure is an NVIDIA 2080 Ti. And so I have the NVIDIA driver installed. So when the thing boots up, I get the desktop and it's using the NVIDIA driver. And I know it's using the NVIDIA driver because, you know, all the NVIDIA settings work and all that kind of stuff. And so GNOME Shell is crashy using the NVIDIA driver on an Intel CPU where there's also an AMD GPU in there.
I don't mean to be pessimistic about this, but I'm not surprised this is crashing. This sounds crazy.
I'll just up the ante a little bit. It also has an Intel IGP as well. So there's you've basically got three GPUs in this, or, you know,
yes,
three graphics processors.
I have all the processors. Yes. So the first thing I thought, sometimes it would go a bit slow, and I thought this might be part of it. And what I mean go slow is Windows would render slowly, or if I open Steam, the mouse would suddenly move super slowly. And things would render really slow for a short while. And it wasn't like bogged down CPU. It felt like a GPU thing. And I couldn't figure it out. And then I realized maybe it's launching the applications on the wrong GPU. There's this whole thing called Prime, which, you know, allows you to launch things and switch GPU and all that kind of stuff. And I naively thought that because I'd got Xorg configured, I'm using Xorg, not Wayland, can't use Wayland, it's NVIDIA. Because I'm using Xorg and I've configured the NVIDIA driver and I know it's using the NVIDIA driver, I just assumed every application was launching and being rendered by the NVIDIA GPU. Turns out not. It turns out I was running the NVIDIA driver, but some of the applications were launching on the AMD GPU and not the NVIDIA GPU. Now, when you've got mixed GPUs, multiple GPUs in GNOME, if you right click on the icon in the launcher for an application, there's an extra option that says launch on dedicated graphics card. And that launches on the NVIDIA card. So I can force launch things. But what I wanted to know was which applications are running on which GPU. Like, are they already on the right one or are they on the wrong one? And so I posted a question on Ask Ubuntu saying, how do I figure out which GPU an application is running on? And rather than tell me the answer that I was looking for, the internet's Alistair Buxton answered and told me what was more useful, which was telling me how the applications get launched. And it uses a program called Switcheroo CTL in GNOME. And Switcheroo CTL allows you to list all the GPUs and see which one is the default and tell it to switch to the other GPU. And so I then closed down all my applications and then started them all up with Switcheroo in front of them So they all launch on the external GPU. So now I can guarantee that everything is running on the GPU, because I thought this might be part of the problem why it's crashing, you know, using this mixed GPU environment. So that's where I got to over the weekend just gone.
So that's interesting about Switcheroo. I'd not heard that before, so that's good to know. Something else you can do to see what processes are running on what GPU is use NVTop. And I know the NV kind of implies NVIDIA, which is its heritage, but it supports Intel, AMD, and NVIDIA now. And on my multi-GPU setups, it shows me both GPUs, and you can see the processes and which processes are running on what GPU, and you see a graph-like load interface for each GPU. So that's a way you can double check that it really is on the GPU you intended to launch it on.
Yes, but NVTop crashes on this machine.
Oh.
So I couldn't use that. You're right. That is a tool that you can use to do that. And yes, it does work on NVIDIA and AMD GPUs. However, the problem was that I was using GNOME Terminal launched from the AMD GPU. And if you run NVTop inside a GNOME Terminal running on the AMD GPU, it just dies. It falls over. Once I'd started launching every single application on the external GPU and thus consuming more energy and basically not using the internal GPU at all, I could then use NVTop and it would allow me to see every application that was running on the NVIDIA card. But everything was running on the NVIDIA card because I told it to launch everything on the NVIDIA card.
So it was doing the right thing at that point.
Yeah, it was. And it is very nice and it's got a graph and everything. However, things still started crashing.
Oh.
And so that wasn't it. That my theory that I had a mixed GPU environment and it was loading things on different GPUs was not the solution. So I went a bit crazy and I shut the system down and I unplugged the NVIDIA GPU completely. Mm-hmm. And I have removed the NVIDIA driver and I have switched my Xorg configuration. So now I am only using the internal GPU. So anyone calling or writing in, forget I mentioned NVIDIA, because from this point onwards, my debugging is going to be solely on the internal GPU. So no external GPU, that's powered off. It's just the internal one. And I've got all my applications just launching on the internal AMD GPU. Well, I assume it's on the AMD one. I haven't checked. No, it is. It is definitely running on the AMD and not the Intel one. And so that's where I am now, and it's still crashing.
Oh.
So I am not entirely happy with this, but that's where I'm at the moment. And I need to do some more deeper debugging now that I've eliminated NVIDIA from the problem. And it's all down to the Intel and AMD GPU.
Right.
I can see GNOME Shell is crashing because there are crash reports in var crash. So I guess I'm going to have to go and follow whatever the process is for doing that. Or just wait until April and then get the next LTS and forget this problem and come back to it and just say, oh no, the LTS fixed it. I don't know. I don't know what to do. So yeah. If anyone has any suggestions that don't involve plugging the NVIDIA card back in again, I'd love to hear it.
I spend an awful lot of time in chat clients of every protocol imaginable. And this last week, I've got three quality of life improvements for my chat online presence that I want to share with you.
Is one of the quality of life improvements close all the chat clients? Is the second one uninstall all the chat clients? And third, burn your phone.
I think the trend is improving because in 2018, I needed 8 chat clients to be an effective member of the open source community. And I think I'm down to 4 that I have regularly open on a day-to-day basis and sometimes a 5th. So we're trending in the right direction, but yeah, it is irritating that in current day, multiple chat clients, what isn't on my list, but what I'm thinking I'm going to have a go at soon is revisit Pidgin and see how far you can get with Pidgin as being this universal interface to everything. If anyone's done that recently, do let us know, but I'm pining for that one app, all the chat. But in lieu of that, I have found 3 things that have radically improved my quality of life with chat. And the first one is very simply just a different theme for Telegram. So I use Telegram a lot for family stuff. There's lots of open source communities that have it. We use it for all of our show organization. And you, dear listener, can come and join us at linuxmatters.sh/telegram, where there are about 700 Linux Matters chatters. And I don't know why I didn't think about doing this sooner, but Telegram looks like a bit of an eyesore in amongst all of the other applications, because it just doesn't fit in. It just looks odd. And so I found there is a Telegram GTK4 color palette theme, which we could just call Add Waiter. And when you enable that theme, suddenly it now looks like it belongs on the desktop alongside all of the other applications that I have.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it is very nice, actually. I love it a lot.
Yeah, you sent me a link to it, and I kind of didn't know how to process the link. What I was supposed to, am I supposed to download a thing and put it in a folder, or do I browse a store, or what? And you just were like, click it, just click the thing.
Yeah, so we'll have a link to this in the show notes. And if you follow that link, it goes to the GitHub project. And toward the top of the README of the GitHub project, I think it says always up-to-date theme. And the way that Telegram themes work is you follow a link to telegram.me or something like that. And it says, ah, this is a theme. Do you want to open this in Telegram? And you say, yes, please. And it shows you a preview of what the theme looks like in Telegram and gives you the option to say, apply it, or no, actually, I don't like the look of it. And something that's been in relatively recent versions of Telegram, which I quite like, is when you add a theme, it stays in your history. So if you then install Telegram Desktop on another computer, that theme is now available to just pick from your settings, as opposed to having to go through that little dance each time.
Huh.
You mentioned Telegram Desktop. Does that mean that this only applies for the desktop client? It's not a theme that can also apply to the mobile client as well?
That is correct. This theme is just for the desktop, and all three of my chat quality of life picks are all desktop Linux related.
So what's the next one?
I'm glad you've asked, because this one has been most revolutionary for me. It is called Fractal, and they've got a number of things right. The first being, of course, it's developed in Rust.
Ah.
But it is a GTK4 Matrix client.
Uh-huh.
And this has totally transformed my feelings towards Matrix. The other clients that I've used, just there's something about the way they work that I've just have bounced off of getting engaged in Matrix communities, because the chat interface just feels so clunky, and I can't really put my finger on it. I just know it feels uncomfortable and cumbersome, and it erects a barrier in my mind for me to actually get engaged in conversations in Matrix. Fractal is simple, beautiful, and elegant. And as a result, I've properly subscribed to all of the right communities that I want to engage with using Fractal in the various Matrix networks. And I think it's terrific.
Nice. I have three Matrix clients on my desktop and I hate them all.
Yeah. Well, give Fractal a try.
I will give this one a try, yes.
Yeah, it's available in all the usual places. I think predominantly they distribute through FlatHub, but you can also find it in some of the distro repositories as well. It's really good. It's simple. It doesn't have the voice integration yet. It's quite new, but I don't need that. I'm just basically using it like a very nice IRC client.
It's funny you should mention that. I have been using IAMB as a Matrix client, and I know you will not appreciate this, but it is a Matrix client for the terminal, just for the console, and it has Vim key bindings, which is a thing I know Martin doesn't know. But it's really nice, because you join a channel, and it's full screen in a terminal, or full size in your terminal, and it's quite lean. IAMB. So I'll add that to your list for you. There you go.
There we go. There's a free one for you. So that's a command line, love, or a modern Unix.
Yes.
Right there. Very good. And my last pick, and this one I love the most, it's called Haloy. And it is, again, developed with Rust. But it is an IRC client. And oh boy, howdy, is this the IRC client for the ages. I love it so much. It's very simple. Although it's a graphical desktop application, it's implemented with a toolkit that's got quite a sort of retro console-esque look to it, but it does do sort of multi-painting and window overlay grabbing and all the rest of it, but it is just super minimal, really efficient, and I have rediscovered my love for IRC. And as much as I like Fractal for interacting on Matrix, Halloy has reminded me why I miss IRC so much, and I really love it. It's fabulous.
I don't know how you're supposed to say the name of the application. I feel like it should be said with an Australian accent.
Halloy?
Like, maybe, maybe not. Maybe that wasn't a very good Australian accent. Send us an audio clip of you saying halloy in an Australian accent. That'd be great. I found Halloy as well last week, and I was inclined to make a snap of it. So if you want an easy way to install it, snap install Halloy, and you too can enjoy the IRC of the future.
Yeah, and for those of you without Snap access, they have a binary in their GitHub releases. But those are my three chat picks that I've recently started using, and my desktop has improved immeasurably because of them.
I learned how to migrate a snap the easy way.
Ooh.
So last time I teased that I was going to be migrating Nextcloud from my old server to my new server.
Mm-hmm.
And Nextcloud is running as a snap. Now, there were several stages to this, because the way that I was running Nextcloud before, I had the snap installed in the normal place that snaps live, and then most of my data was sitting on my RAID array, which was mounted somewhere else, and I used the external storage feature of Nextcloud to have folders that are on my RAID array, but served through Nextcloud and synced with Nextcloud and so on. However, on my new server, I don't have the RAID array and I just wanted everything in one place. So my first step was to copy all of my stuff into the snap, which was okay, except it took a long time. And then it decided that even though I made very carefully sure that they were exactly the same named files in exactly the same place under Nextcloud, it still saw them as different files and decided to resync everything to my laptops.
Ah.
So that took a while.
When you say copy into Nextcloud, what you're saying is copy it from the RAID array into a directory that's like native exactly. to the snap that it can see. Okay, got it.
From the web interface's point of view, there was still a folder called music, which had all of my music in exactly the same place. But instead of being an external storage folder, it was now just a local to Nextcloud folder, essentially. That resulted in a complete resync of identical files to my laptops, which was a bit annoying and took a while, but that was fine. I could live with that. The next stage was deciding what I was going to migrate to, because although I've been running with a snap and I'm quite happy with it, there is also another option which is provided and supported by Nextcloud themselves, which is the Nextcloud all-in-one Docker image. And this is basically a way of them bundling up Nextcloud and all of the supporting services and all of the features pre-configured. And you have various optional bits and various necessary bits that you can install and run through Docker.
So in the past, we've talked about things like OnlyOffice as a part of Nextcloud. Does this all-in-one image include the Office suites, or is that still like an add-on?
Yes, that includes Nextcloud Office as part of it.
Right.
As well as some other things like backup solution and various configuration options. So I had a look at this, but it works in an interesting way, but not a way that I particularly wanted. So there's something that you can do called Docker in Docker.
Yes.
So when you run Docker, it has a Unix socket, which essentially clients can connect to and interact with the Docker API. And if you want a Docker container to be able to run other Docker images, you can essentially bind mount that socket inside the container, and then it can run Docker commands against the host's Docker service and run its own containers, which is how the Nextcloud Docker all-in-one system, I won't call it an image because it's actually a collection of images, works.
Okay. And are they discrete images or one image with containers inside a top-level image?
So you run the Nextcloud AIO image, and then it manages a sort of cluster of containers running on your host, basically. So it runs the web container and the database container and all of the other bits that needs to run alongside. And this is a very interesting idea, but all of my other Docker stuff is all managed through Docker Compose, and I quite like that. And I didn't want to add this other completely self-managed beast alongside it. So I decided not to go for that option. And to be honest, I've been very happy with the Snap. It works very well. It's very well maintained. The other option was that I basically designed my own cluster of containers to run all of these bits for Nextcloud. But again, they're all contained within the Snap and it all works quite well. So I thought, well, how do I take, you know, it's not like with AdGuard where I just had one configuration file to copy. How do I copy all of this and make sure that all of my accounts and all of the settings and all of the CalDAV stuff and the files and all of the stuff all comes across? And it turns out it's really, really easy. So Snaps have a feature called Snapshots.
Ah, I was hoping you would come up with this solution. I was wondering, what's he going to do? What's he going to do?
Yeah.
And yes.
So all you do is you stop the snap, you run snap save Nextcloud, and that creates a snapshot, which is a very big zip file. You copy that to your new machine, install the snap, stop it, put the snapshot in the snapshots folder, and run, oh, I think you have to run a discover or something command to find the snapshot, and then you run restore and it unzips it and you start the snap again and it's all running. This did take a long time.
Yes.
It took about 24 hours to copy between servers. I think partly this is down to me having slow disks on my old server. Oh no, sorry, it wasn't the copying. It was the creation of the snapshot and then the copying. It took 24 hours in total to complete the process. But I think a lot of that was, yeah, slow disks and the creation of the snap. The creation of the snapshot.
How big was your snapshot? How much data are you moving?
300 gig. So yeah, that was all of my music and all of my files and audiobooks and things like that. I haven't migrated all of my video because I don't have room for all of that on my new server. More on that next time.
I think there is another way you could do it, which is just stop Nextcloud on the source.
Yeah.
Install it on the target and then stop it. So all the directory structure gets created and then just rsync the whole folder over from one to the other, because it's all in a known directory. It's all in varsnap, Nextcloud, whatever. And if you're running the same revision on both ends, then the folder name will be the same. It will just be a numeric folder name and one called current, which is a symlink. And you could just like whang all the files across the network. I don't know if that would be faster because you're sending uncompressed stuff, but it's another option.
Yeah, I don't think any of the stuff that I have in there is stuff that compresses particularly well anyway.
Right.
But yeah, I did sort of have that in my mind as an initial option. But when I discovered that snapshots were a thing, I figured that just copying the directories might end up being fiddly. I might get it wrong and not copy everything, or, you know, I might have the wrong revision you know, not have the same revision installed at both ends and something might go wrong. But I saw that this was, you know, a really neat little method, and it worked. It worked really well. And I'd definitely do this again if I was migrating another snap.
And you've got a backup of the snap in a zip file.
The snapshot feature of snaps is little known and underutilized, and it sounds like you've stress tested it to the extreme there.
I think so. And the other good thing about this was as well that if in setting up Nextcloud, once I'd restored the snap, if something went wrong, I could then quite easily roll back what I'd done wrong by blowing it away and restoring the snapshot again.
Yeah, that's a very good point, actually. Are you going to now use snapshots as like a backup strategy for your next cloud snap?
No, I will talk more about my backup strategy again on a future episode, because that's also a bit more complicated. But just creating the whole thing in a zip file and then trying to move that zip file around places didn't seem ideal, given that not everything is going to be changing all the time. And really, I just want to back up the bits that have changed.
Well, I look forward to the next installment of your server journey.